So hello, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, good morning in different parts of the world. I hope sincerely that you and your families are safe and sound. I am Vanessa Rubio, professor of practice of our SPP. I'm delighted to be here with you today. We're glad to offer these policy and practice seminars series for our students in the Lent term 2021. And today I am really honored and glad to have a good friend of mine, a great public servant from Central America, from Guatemala, Carlos Raúl Morales. You all had a chance to look into his biography prior to this event, but I'll read some aspects of it. Carlos Raúl was Guatemala's foreign affairs ministry in three different administrations, as hard as that can be anywhere in the world, but in Guatemala, in that period in particular, as we might learn from Carlos Raúl later on, this is quite a challenge. He was also candidate for vice president in the general election of 2019. He's a graduate of legal and social sciences of the San Carlos University in his native Guatemala. He's a career diplomat and has been in Spain, Italy, Chile, the Holy See, among others. So a very experienced public servant, which is a part of history of Guatemala, of its bilateral relationships with its neighbors in Central America, with Mexico, with the US, the rest of Latin America and the world. But also Carlos Raúl has participated in dozens of multilateral fora, some of which we jointly participated together some years ago. And he's an expert in areas such as security, borders, migration, trade, climate, among others. We are really excited to have you, Carlos Raúl. And just before we give the word to you, Carlos Raúl has kindly prepared a presentation for us. So we're going to be listening to that. And after that, in my role as chair, I will be making you some questions in order for you to share your experiences with us. And then I will open the floor to the students. So if you would like to pose questions, if you can use the chat part of the screen and ask for the word, because I will give the word directly to you. So we have a more interactive dialogue. So without any further comments, please, Carlos Raúl, the floor is yours. You're muted.
I'm sorry. Okay, thank you, Vanessa. Let me show my presentation, then I can begin. Just a second, please. Okay, I want to thank my very good friend, Vanessa Rubio, for this invitation to share with you my experiences as Guatemalan public servant, as well as to comment on two serious problems in my country, migration and corruption, which are not exclusive of Guatemala, by the way. We just talked with Vanessa about this situation. I met Vanessa as a diplomat. She was the Deputy Secretary of Foreign Affairs of Mexico, and I was her counterpart from Guatemala some years ago. Our countries have had a difficult relationship because of the importance of sharing a 1,000-kilometer border that faces many challenges, narco-traffic, migration. You don't have an idea the problems that we face in this border. I want to tell you that when I met Vanessa, we were able to do a lot of things for our countries. It's very nice to work with a professional, honest, positive, and proactive person who is always looking for a solution to problems like is Vanessa. Thank you very much for this invitation. For me, it's a privilege to give this talk today. Some years ago, the London School of Economics, by the way, invited me to London to be a part of a panel where we discuss about the drugs decriminalization process that Guatemala, Mexico, and Colombia proposed to the UN General Assembly in 2012. Let me begin by saying a few things about my country. Guatemala is neighbor with Mexico, as Vanessa mentioned, with Belize, El Salvador, and Honduras. We have a population of almost 18 million people. Most of the people, 65% of the population, are indigenous people. We have 23 ethnic groups in the country, which means 23 languages. Our GDP in 2019 was $85.3 billion. I don't want to talk about 2020. Doesn't make sense. And the per capita GDP in 2019 was $3,413. Our economic growth in 2019 was 3.6%. And last year, we only decreased 1.5%, which means that Guatemala and Paraguay, we were the better countries in the whole Latin American region. The pandemic, of course, affect the country, but not like other like other countries in the region. The foreign direct investment last year was $892 million, 4% of inflation. The public debt is only 25%. It's really low compared with other countries. But we have, this is one of our big problems. The government revenues in 2019 was only 9.7% respect to GDP. We have 62% of poverty before the pandemic. We need to see what happened when the World Bank present the information after the pandemic. We have 4 million people living in the United States. The remittances last year was $11.3 billion. It is a very important amount of money. And it represents the 14.6% respect the GDP of the country. And our main partners, economical partners, of course, and political partners too, is United States, where we send the 40% of our exports, and the Central American countries, which represent the Central American market, which we send the 30% of our exports. Guatemala is a country of opportunities. We are very close to the one of the largest markets in the world, United States. Miami is just 2 hours from Guatemala City. Houston is 2.5 hours. We have a very strategic location. We have a coast in both oceans, in the Caribbean and in the Pacific. We have very hardworking people. It is very important. Most of our migrants are very accepted in the United States because they work very hard, very hard. We have great climatic conditions in the country. We have an stable currency, good macroeconomic conditions, and a strong private sector, very strong private sector. We have many tourism attractions. We have a multicultural population, as I mentioned, 23 language, 23 ethnic groups. We have the largest agro producer in Central America, and definitely we have the Central American common market. It is very important to mention because each country of the Central American common market with Guatemala, we are the second, we represent the second partner of the same region. But we have two problems. And I just want to mention a little bit about migration and about corruption. Guatemala is a country rich in natural resources. However, its biggest problem is inequality. A permanent challenge has been the implementation of strategies to reduce poverty. As I mentioned, Guatemala is a multi-ethnic country where we cohabit 23 ethnic groups, and where 23 languages are spoken. Alto, Spanish is the official language. Most of the population is indigenous. Being relative close to one of the world's greatest powers, United States, it is an invitation to migrate to the United States. I would like to clarify that Guatemalans do not like to migrate. Guatemalans migrate out of necessary, but an interesting phenomenon is that as soon as they achieve their main economic goal, they return to Guatemala. It is very interesting to mention. The main reason for migration in our case is the first one, the economical reason, because people are looking for better incomes, for a better job. And second one, the family reunification, because we have 4 million people living in the United States, and most of these people are asking to their relatives to migrate and to reunify in the United States. Unlike those published by the media, security is not really an important reason to migrate in Guatemala. I want to mention that because If you listen to the media will say that the security is the main reason of migration in the whole Central American region, but it's not true in the case of Guatemala. As I mentioned, the country has approximately 18 million people, and four million are living in the United States. And from these 4 million people living in the United States, only 1 million people will be regularized. We have big expectation about this new migration policy of President Biden, because most of Guatemalan people living in the United States could be benefited with this new policy. Another very interesting information is that the 98% of the Guatemalans who have migrated to another country, they live in the United States. What is worrying in the country is increasingly depend on remittances, which have been growing at a rate of $1 billion per year. Until 2019, the total exports accounted for the main foreign exchange income. However, in 2020, the remittances exceed the total exports, which have been approximately $11 billion annually. This is worry because suppose we expect that the country produce the necessary because the people need to stay in the country. But now that the remittances already exceed the total exports, government has to think about it, because we need to produce more in the country. We need to attract more investment to the countries. One of the causes associated with migration definitely is corruption. Because of corruption, the quality of Guatemalan public services are the worst, reason for which many people made a decision to look for better opportunities in the United States of America. In 2007, Guatemala approved the creation of a United Nations Commission Against Impunity. Impunity. We call it CICIG. This is a UN commission which helped Guatemala to fight against corruption. In 2015, the commission discovered a corruption network involving the president of that moment, who had to resign from office, along with half of his cabinet. This commission was supported by Barack Obama's administration at this time. However, the country's next president decided to end the commission because it was investigating people very close to him. It's very sad, but it is the truth. Many politicians in Guatemala and Latin America engage in politics to become rich. Sad, no? It's very sad, but it's true. And not to serve their people. This must change. The academic and moral level of many politicians is very low. They are just looking for their personal interest, and this results in a poor provision of public services, which in turn generates migration. Sadly, seeing how 4 million Guatemalans have had to migrate to the United States because the country is deteriorating more and more. Guatemala, the Americas, and the world at large need honest public servants working for the population. I invite you to work in the public service of your countries to contribute to its development, to reduce poverty, and to generate well-being for your people. We live in a globalized but unequal world. It is important that developed countries understand developing countries and help us change them with education. I know is that work for the governments is not at least in Latin American countries, don't generate a very good reputation. But I can assure you that the countries, the whole region, need from very good people. It's not possible that politicians, that people get involved in this in this profession because it's a profession just because they want to be rich, just because they want to take advantage of the position just to get rich. We need to change that history. We need to change that part of the history of our countries. And the only way is that people that you receive this kind of education at this institution, the London School of Economics, get involved in the public service in your countries. In my case, let me tell you you a little bit about myself. I began my career, my diplomatic career, in 1988. I served my country for 28 years. I started my diplomatic career in the one of the lowest public service positions. I had the privilege of ascending and become Minister of Foreign Affairs, a position from which I was able to serve my country. Guatemala's foreign policy issue in my time focused on five axes. The first one, resolving the Guatemalan territorial dispute with Belize. I don't know if you are familiar with this region, but Guatemala and Belize, we have a territorial dispute since 200 years ago. And finally, we are in the process to give a solution. Finally, we put the case at the International Court of Justice, which is very good news because we need to think as how come we develop our countries, not how come we fight against between our countries. The second issue was the migration. As I mentioned, we have a large community of Guatemalans living in the United States, more than 4 million people. And at the moment, I assume the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, we only have 10 consulates in the whole United States. We try to increase the number of offices in the United States. And when I left my office, we left 21 consulates. We duplicate the number of consulates in the United States. In Mexico too, in the north of Mexico City, Guatemala only used to have one consulate in Tijuana. And when sadly, you probably hear about the news, what happened in Tamaulipas a month ago, 19 migrants died because the organized crime killed them. And I focus on to open two or three consulates in the north of Mexico City just to provide help to our migrants that are trying to reach the south border of the United States. The third axis I focus it was in the Central American integration. The Central American integration system is very valuable for us, especially because we create in 1961 the Central American Common Market, and it provides us a lot of benefits, especially in the economic area. Generates a lot of jobs. We can we have a very interesting agreements between the Central American countries. We have the 99% of the goods that we produce in the Central American areas has the same taxes today, for example, and the 97% of the wood we produce outside of the Central American area had the same taxes too. We work very hard on that area, and especially on the Central American integration system. And Vanessa knows very well the Central American integration system too, because Mexico is a very good friend of that system. Then the fourth axis was the better participation, a greater participation in multilateralisms. Guatemala has very good bilateral relations, but our participation in the multilateral area used to be very poor. And we, for the first time, we proposed Guatemala to be part of the Security Council of the United Nations, and we did it thanks to the support of many countries, but Guatemala need to participate more in the multilateral area. And finally, the last area where we focus, it was the promotion of Guatemala, the exports, the commerce with Guatemala. It is very important for us. And in that order, I have to open around 8 embassies of Guatemala, particularly in Asia, in the south of Asia, in Africa, in India. Guatemala didn't have an embassy in India, for example, and it is very important for us. Finally, we have it. We used to focus only in the region, in the hemispheric, in Europe, but that's it. And it was necessary to see another regions, particularly if we want to do business with another areas of the world. I am pleased to have worked for my country, for my people, and to make Guatemala a better country. My diplomatic service end, and this is very important to mention, when I disagree with the way the government was dealing with corruption in my country, in particular with this commission I mentioned, the United Nations Commission Against Impunity. I am now happy, I will now happy to answer your question for further discussion. Vanessa, thank you for this time. And well, I hope so. I use 15 minutes, I hope so. And any question, I am here. This picture, by the way, is with Vanessa in Costa Rica, 2015 probably. We met in Costa Rica for a meeting of SICA, of the Central American Integration System. And really, when I was creating this presentation, I was looking for a very nice picture with Vanessa, and I found this. Vanessa, thank you really for this invitation, for allowing me to talk with your students. And now I think we can answer the questions they have.
Thank you so much, Carlos Raúl. Thank you for the thorough presentation that you you synthesized in a snapshot 30 years of hard work and 30 years of dedicated work to your country, to your country's public service. I have two comments that I would like to make to you to get your reactions. The first one is a premise I've always had in terms of the development in Central America. We have had many projects, international projects that were aimed at collaborating with Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, and the rest of Central America, and that wanted to enhance Central American integration. I've always said that Central America has the same population that Canada and can really be the next success story in the region. But one thing that if you give me one thing that I think we need to focus on to promote the development of Central America is energy. And we have seen projects, Partnership for Prosperity, Puebla Panama Plan, you name it. Like the last 30 years, basically presidents in the United States, presidents from Mexico, presidents from Central America had gathered in these summits and have envisaged cooperation projects for Central America and for further integration of Central America with Mexico. What I think is that when we envisage this problem, this project, we had like 20 different projects and we never got to solving one of them. So one of the if I would be now working for the future project, cooperation project from the US in Central America that has been put forward, one of the things I would suggest is focus and stop having like 105 projects, but rather have one or two projects that really touch on the depth and the structure of development. And one of the projects in my mind would be energy. When one crosses the border between Chiapas, a southern state in Mexico, and go to Guatemala, energy costs twice or thrice. So if one changes and is able to change the energy matrix in Central America, one would be able to change the development matrix in the whole region. That's one idea that I've always had, and I would like to hear your thoughts about it. And the second one is regarding the UN Commission Against Impunity. I know how hard it is to have a country that is stuck in problems of corruption and impunity, which is like the bad cousin or the bad brother of corruption. But at the same time, I have a hard time conceptually in terms of subjects such as intervention, sovereignty, no? And I've always discussed this with you, I remember for many times, how to deal with the fact that a United Nations Commission Against Corruption and Impunity has to be developed for a certain country, in this case, Guatemala, and that the solution for such a problem comes from abroad and not from within Guatemala. So your thoughts on the energy, on changing the energy matrix as a prerequisite to change the development matrix in Central America. And in the other hand, issues related to sovereignty, to intervention in terms of such a powerful impunity and corruption commission from the United Nations, you know, being the panacea perhaps, or being the only way out of this terrible disease that as you well mentioned, many of our countries face. So I would love to hear your thoughts on both. Thank you so much.
Very good questions. Wow. Okay, Vanessa, the first one. You are right. We have a lot of initiatives in the area. As a matter of fact, we agreed to implement our custom union since 1961 when we created the Central American Common Market. We create at this time, for example, the Central American Integration Bank, CAVCABEI. Well, we create many institutions. What happened? Well, and now we have, as you mentioned, we have a lot of initiatives. At the beginning was the Plan Puebla Panamá, then it was converted in Proyecto Mesoamerica. Then after the crisis of migrants in 2014 in the United States, Barack Obama's administration created the Plan de la Alianza para la Prosperidad. Well, President Trump created America Crece. CEPAL created PDI, Plan de Desarrollo Integral. Well, it's a very long list. What happened? I think, Vanessa, we need to, it is why I focus as foreign minister, I privilege the Central American integration. To advance in the Central American integration, it is necessary to have first the economical Central American integration. This is the first step, as happened in Europe. We cannot have a political integration if we don't have first an economical integration. This is the first step. And the first step to create the economical integration is the custom union. What happened is there are many interests, private interests in each country that doesn't allow the rest of the countries to advance in this custom union. In 2014, I remember we were flying to Honduras to pay an official visit to President Hernandez. He was new in office probably. When we did this trip, President Hernandez has 3-4 months in office, and we proposed him to advance in the custom union, bilateral, Guatemala and Honduras, because the rest of the countries of the Central American region, they didn't advance. And President Hernandez said, yes, let's do it. And now, Vanessa, we have already a bilateral custom union. El Salvador, 2-3 years later, he integrated to this bilateral. Now it's a trilateral custom union. But we need to concrete this economical integration. Why, for example, and you mentioned the energy integration, we have CEPAC, which is a very important project that look for to have a interconnection from Guatemala to Panama, and then from the Central American region with Mexico, and from the Central American region to Colombia. And right now we have an interconnection. Guatemala has a bilateral interconnection with Mexico. But what happened? Why didn't we didn't advance? It's very easy, Vanessa. We don't have an electricity market in the region. What we have is that each government has a local governance on electricity, and most of the countries doesn't have the same regulations. Then, if you don't allow the market to grow up, if you don't allow the market to regulate itself, it's very difficult. If governments insist to control the electrical market, we are not going to do it. In the case of Guatemala, let me tell you that we have an electrical market. This is why in Guatemala, the cost of the energy is very low, and the government doesn't interfere in that market, which is we have a very good system. I remember when you were Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs, your authorities from the Comisión Federal de Electricidad visit us many times because they want to know more about our model. What we need to do now, Vanessa, is that each country, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, in the case of Costa Rica, the government, the state, is the owner of the company. It's a national company. In the case of Panama, we need to create just one regulation. And this regulation, in that regulation, the government doesn't have to interfere. If governments insist to interfere in that market, forget it. We are not going to get it. This is the only way. now we have the plan Biden for Central America. President Biden want to destine $4 billion for the next 4 years. But I can assure you, Vanessa, nothing is going to work if we don't have a coordination between our countries. I was talking to you before this conference began that I am worried for the region. There is not political dialogue between our countries. 10 years ago, we can have difference between countries, but at least we sit in a meeting, in a summit, and we discuss our difference. Now there is nothing. The country doesn't talk with the other ones. We have probably two blocks in our region. I am talking about the whole Latin American countries, and it's very sad because what we advance in our era, now we are going back. And the same happened in Central American countries. I am not anymore diplomat. I can talk very, very free, but the situation between the Northern Triangle is very worried. The president of El Salvador doesn't talk with the president of Honduras. The president of El Salvador doesn't talk with the president of Nicaragua. Honduras doesn't talk with Nicaragua too. Guatemala doesn't want to interfere. Do you know the Central American integration system is going down? I remember the summit of 2019, because Salvador has the presidencia pro tempore at this time. And the summit of the Central American integration system at this time was the first summit in the whole history of the integration system that didn't attend a president. No one president assists to that summit. Only directors, only vice ministers, and it's a summit of presidents. It reflects that we have a very, very important problems in the region. And I think, Vanessa, the first problem is that there is no dialogue between our leaders, and this is very worrying. This is the first question. The second one, this Commission of United Nations Against Impunity. Vanessa, let me tell you something. In the case of Guatemala, was Guatemala who requested to United Nations to create this commission in the country. Remember that Guatemala suffered an internal war for 36 years, more or less. And as a product of the peace negotiation, we agreed to create this commission just to fight against impunity and against corruption. The Guatemalan Congress approved the creation of this commission. The Constitutional Court of Guatemala approved this commission. And the objective of this commission is to give support to the national authorities, to be specific, to the Attorney General in the investigation of impunity and investigation of corruption. What happened is when this commission, because they had a lot of tools that the local authorities didn't have, the United States and many countries support a lot of this community, this commission. When they began to discover a lot of corruption networks, and they pass the information to the Attorney General, many of the politicians in Guatemala didn't like it, and they say, no, this is our sovereignty. This is how come a foreigner can come to the country to accuse us. But to be honest, they just support the national authorities. Vanessa, the corruption, the impunity is a serious problem in the whole region, not only in Guatemala. And you can see the results in Guatemala. The commission was rejected from Guatemala in 2019. After that, the conditions of the country is going worse. We have many problems with the corruption. Just a couple of days ago, the authority discovered that the country buy something like $1 million in tests for COVID-19 that are false. They falsificate the test in Guatemala, and the Ministry of Health buy this test with the compliments of the government, and if you see around the corner, you will see a lot of problems with corruption. The solution is not to create another commission, because it will be impossible that the Guatemalan Congress approve again a commission like this. But we need to support our national authorities. But what happened now in Guatemala, and it is very complicated, Vanessa, is that the organized crime, who has a lot of interest to co-opt the juridical power, is because, do you know, as Mexico, we are a corridor of drugs that are coming from South America to the United States. They are very interesting to co-opt the juridical authorities. We are in the process to elect courts this year, and we have a big faith inside our society, because some sectors are saying that that the left is going to take the power, and the other sector says no, it's the right. But do you know something? It's not a matter of right or left. It's a matter of organized crime, and the organized crime is not left, it's not right. They just want to take the control of the country because they want to pass more drugs through Guatemala. And we don't have, I don't know what happened to our authorities, but we are not seeing that the real problem is the organized crime, is not the left, it's not the right. We need to have the capability, well, to talk between our sectors. And evident, we are not going to have the same position, but at least we should have the capability, well, to negotiate and to agree, to have agreements. But we need to have clear, Vanessa, that the enemy is not the left, is not the right, it's the organized crime. And in this case, another commission will be impossible. But I believe that the local authorities, the attorney general, they could be more strong if the society, the Guatemalan society, provide all the support to the local authorities. I'm sorry to be long my answer.
It was a great answer to very complex and deep and profound problems in Guatemala. And now I would pass on the word to Frank Mucci, who wants to ask you a question. Please, Frank.
Hi, it's a relatively specific question. You mentioned that the Central American countries have driven apart over the last decade, that the presidents don't speak to one another and their relations have deteriorated. Why is that? Is it like a circumstantial thing of the personalities of leaders, or is it a deeper geopolitical thing, or is it some other incentive problem? So like, why have relations deteriorated in Central America? Thank you very much for the talk.
Thank you, Frank. Well, very good question. Where are you from?
Venezuela.
Venezuela, okay. Well, what happened is the history of Central America is very complicated, it's very complex. But now, I will focus on what happened today, because if I go to the history, there are many things to talk about it. But we have serious problems. Well, we used to have problems between Costa Rica and Nicaragua because they have political differences, but this is not new. This is very long, has many years, the difference between that countries. And in history, the rest of the countries support, well, Costa Rica and Nicaragua to have a very good relation. But what happened now is that the new president of El Salvador, during his campaign, the president, I think, of Honduras, yes, Honduras, he interfered in the domestic politics of El Salvador, and this new president will say, no, Honduras is my enemy, and I think President Bukele took position in 2019, and until today, 2 years later, they never sit in a meeting, never. Honduras had been attacked by El Salvador and said, no, I'm not going to participate with nothing with Honduras. Honduras and El Salvador used to have border difference in the past, but now this is fixed already. The situation with Nicaragua is complicated too, because the president of Nicaragua is the same since long time ago, since 2007, I think, is Ortega in power in Nicaragua. And the relation is deteriorating, because I think I can resume in one word. I think there is not, they are not mature. There is not, these politicians are not mature. Their difference between them could be fixed by talking, by establish a dialogue between them and say, well, what we can fix, what we cannot fix. I remember when I met Vanessa, and this is a very good history, Guatemala and Mexico, well, we used to face many problems, a lot of difference. Do you remember, Vanessa? And when I met Vanessa for the first time, Vanessa told me, well, amigo, let's see, let's do a list of our problems. And let's see which one we can solve and which one we cannot solve. But it's not possible that because the problems we cannot solve, we don't talk. And then we did the list, do you remember, Vanessa? And we separate the issues. We have serious issues between both countries, but we say, no, this is not the time to talk about this. Leave it for later. And we focus on the issues we can solve. And do you know, today, Mexico and Guatemala has a great relationship. It's normal that we face problems. It's very normal, particularly because we have guns, Honduras, El Salvador, particularly because the organized crime, because ridiculous political difference, because are ridiculous. I don't have another way to call the difference, are ridiculous. But really, if a president is not doesn't have the necessary, is not mature, he don't think, well, I can sit with my counterpart, let's talk about our problems. I'm sorry, this is not a leader. And I think we have some problems, serious problems in the area. El Salvador internally has serious problems too. They are going to face, they have elections, assembly elections now in March. They are experiencing a lot of problems internally. Well, the president of Honduras has a lot of problems too. Do you know the authorities, the attorney general from New York accused him to be a to collaborate with the narco traffic. Well, the situation is not easy, but I think if they want to do it, if they have the goodwill to fix it, they could fix it. Because I think the people of El Salvador, the people of Honduras, the people of Guatemala, we used to be brothers for a long, long time. And another issue very important is these caravans for migrants, caravans that began in Honduras since 3 years ago. Probably you saw on the news, thousands of people trying to move to the United States to reach the south border. And according to the migration policies of our country, we need to stop these caravans, and this create problems between countries too, because it's not easy. But the truth is that the common problem of the whole region is poverty. Our governments are not doing nothing to solve the poverty. And I think we need to invest a lot of money in the people. And this is what is not happening. This is the truth, to be honest. And after ETA and IOTA, that caused a lot of problems in the region too, we have more poverty. The poverty increased in Honduras and El Salvador particularly. And I think our governments are not focused to attend this part of the population, Frank.
And if I may add, Carlos Raúl, after your very relevant and thorough answer, one thing we cannot allow is to stop dialogue in any way possible. So you might have countries in which the relationship is quite, you know, easy and it flows, but obviously you have a more demanding and more complex relationships with your neighbors. Just think about the country where you're from, any country that where you're from, and think about your neighbors. Obviously, neighbors have more problems because you have a common border, because you have a lot of dimensions of the relationship. And one thing you cannot afford by being in a leadership position is to close dialogue. That's the last thing you to do. So you should start as we did in terms of the relationship with Guatemala and Mexico. We started with an agenda in which we put everything in a document. We said, this is the agenda as a whole. Well, what are the things we can focus on where we can be creative, where we can be positive, and where we can find solutions? So there we started with the agenda on the topics that could be more easily solved and more easily dealt by. And then we started to deal also with more difficult historic problems that should also have dialogue involved. You might advance, you know, one step at a time and perhaps not solve them structurally and for once and for all, but at least you have some spaces of dialogue. At least you have some spaces to air differences and to see what aspects in collaboration you can look into, no? I remember, it's another topic, but I remember once when we, in Mexico, there were these approaches between the US and Cuba, no? In the previous administration of President Obama. And I remember one of the questions that I was asked to make to the Cubans from the United States, mediating in that approaches that were made, was if Guatemala was willing to speak about everything, if everything was going to be part of the discussions and the table of negotiations. And the answer by Cuba was that it was the case, that everything should be on the table. They might have agreements, they might not have agreements, but that when countries are not able to have a dialogue, when countries are not able to discuss about everything, you're not doing your job as the leader. No, that's what you are there for. And just shutting dialogue and stop cooperation and stop negotiations is not the way to move forward. No, definitely in international relations as a whole. But I'll pass on the word to Amory Gonzalez so you can make your question. Please, Amory.
Thank you, Vanessa. Carlos Raúl, thank you for your talk. I have actually two questions. The first one is, you mentioned drugs as a main problem in the region. Would you think that legalizing them would make things easier for countries like Central Americans? And the second question is, well, you've been really honest and really transparent over your role in the public government, in the government. How did you manage yourself in such a corrupt environment and you actually reach a really high position? What would you recommend to other people who actually want to be public servants and don't want to be like dirty about corruption, all this kind of stuff?
Okay, thank you for your question, Amory. Well, the first one, in 2012, Guatemala, Mexico, and Colombia, we proposed to the General Assembly of United Nations to well to discuss the drugs policy. We face a big problem, UNODC. I can talk today because I am not any more diplomat, but the position of UNODC was very, 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 very strong. There are two things we need to discuss. The first one is the internal market in the United States, because they generate a big demand of drugs. And well, I remember we were in a meeting when, I don't remember who was the person from Mexico who said, well, let's allow United States to send the airplanes to Colombia and to South America to load the drugs and fly directly to the United States, and then we avoid the problem in our region. There is a problem with the local market in the United States, and we need to face it and we need to talk about it because nobody talk about it. This is a fact. We need to talk about it. And the second one is, which is our problem? In the case of Guatemala, and I think in the case of the whole region, every day we have more consumers. This is a fact too. We have more people that consume, but I think still being a very low rate. It's not really a very high rate, but every day is increasing and increasing and increasing. The organized crime pay to the locals to help with the traffic of narcotics, not with money, with products. Then they need they have to sell the drugs in the country, and this is why we are increasing the people that consume drugs in Guatemala. Our position at that time was to talk about what need to do. What need to do to reduce the violence that generate the narcotraffic, because our problem is the violence. Our problem is the people that die every day because of the narcotraffic. And we need two things. The first one is to discuss in the United States a policy to face the problem they have inside the United States. And they didn't, as you know. And the second one in our region, We propose, well, to legalize some kind of drugs, the soft drugs, as cannabis, for example, and to legalize the use of these drugs for medical purposes. Because in the case of Guatemala, you cannot use nothing. We have a very, very strong law. And the position of UNODC doesn't help too much. Finally, we proposed to United Nations to discuss this issue in 2012. And United Nations finally discussed this issue in 2016. But UNODC, United Nations Drugs, and I don't remember the full name of this organization, which is in Vienna, they are stopping the discussion of this issue. I think, Amory, that it is important to legalize the soft drugs in our country. For example, cannabis doesn't make sense, but at the same time, it is important to educate our people, to educate our kids, to educate our youth, because they need to know what happened if they use it. I think it's a problem that later or sooner we need to discuss seriously, but in this discussion has to participate United States, because they are the market, they are demanding the product, and without their participation will be impossible to fix it, will be totally impossible. Related to your second question, which was your second question, I'm sorry?
How did you manage to navigate, like, in
Well, do you know, it's a matter of principles, it's a matter of moral, it's a matter of how you were educated by your parents. And in my case, well, it was difficult, it was not easy, because half of the cabinet is in jail today, still in jail today, or they have an order to be captured. But you know what is good and what is bad. I think it's not about of money, it's about of education, it's about of what kind of parents did you have. I have a wife, I have kids, I have two kids, I have, well, the first thing I think is in my kids. To be fine, to provide them a good education. Do you know, well, in my case, I think the first thing came to my mind was to act well, because I have a life after this position. In my case, my whole career was in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. I was ascending from third secretary to second, to first, to counselor, to minister counselor, then to ambassador, to general director. Well, when the president Perez invited me to be minister, I really think about it. I really think, well, to be honest, Amory, I think to refuse the offer because I want to continue with my diplomatic career, accept a position like this. I know that the risk was to go out of government, as happened. Didn't happen with President Perez, because finally another two presidents invite me to continue the position until I say, no, this is not possible anymore. When this commissioner against impunity, Ivan Velasquez from Colombia, will discover in an investigation, they discovered that people very close to the president of the moment were involved in corruption. They tried to fire him. They tried to declare it non grato in the country. And I say, no, this is my moment. I have to go. And well, I did it. And do you know something? I feel very proud today what I did. I did it. If it happened again in my life, I will do it again. But I think it's a matter of moral, it's a matter of principles, it's a matter of what you want for your life in the future. If you are lucky, you will live 100 years. And after this war, there is another one and you need to face what you did in this war. I think it's, honestly, is one of the principles we need always to put in the front of all principles, Amore.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Carlos Raúl, for being so open and so frank with us in all of these matters. We have three more questions so far. So first Victoria, then Paulo, then Manuela. Please, Victoria.
Hello, Carlos Raúl. Thank you so much for your time today. I want to ask you a question related to a topic you raised at the very beginning. You said that many politicians people in Guatemala become politicians because they want to get rich. And I know that, for instance, in my class, there are people from Guatemala who are very, very clever and very socially driven and motivated to, you know, deliver for their people. And I wonder, what do you think could need to change in the Guatemalan institutions to attract these kind of people to become politicians? Because generally, you hear the message that, oh, no, you know, if you don't want to get into trouble with corruption, or if you don't want to get in any dirty thing, you prefer not to go into politics. What should change?
Wow. Yeah, it's not easy. To be honest, the good people in Guatemala, the clever people, they don't want to get involved in politician because it represents problems in the future. It's not easy. It's not easy. We need to change the system. But to change the system, we need to provide education. We need to fight the poverty. We need to we need to change the country. But to change the country, we need the good people. And now, being involved in politician in Guatemala is not the best. Your reputation will be very bad. It's not easy to go out of the position with a good reputation. And you need to be crazy to if you are a good person to get involved in politicians. It's not easy. But we need to do it. In the last elections, when I was out of government, I received a proposal to be candidate to vice president. We almost win. we lost in the second round. And to be honest, I don't know what I will do if we won Victoria because, it's very complicated. When you need a team. You need a very good team to government. And when you don't have a team, it's very difficult because you don't know who is the person next to you. And something very interesting, as soon as it was public, like I was candidate, a lot of people came to me. I want to support you. And you don't have an idea who is. Everybody. And in this country, the people that are involved in corruption, and probably happened the same in Mexico and the rest of countries in Latin America, these groups interesting, for example, to sell medicines or to construct roads or to do many kinds of business with government, send people from their team next to you to get involved, to get involved in your circle, just because if you win, they will have something inside next to you. It's not easy, Victoria. It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. And but my advice is to, well, if a person has principles, have moral, and we need to change, and we want to change the country because we need it, the only way is to get involved. It's the only way, and try to detect the bad people and try to put away the bad people. But it's a process. There is not a recipe. There is not a recipe to do the things you want. It's in the process. You need to smell the people. You need to realize who is who. And another very important thing is when you are good, the bad guys will accuse you to be corrupt too. And they will try to discredit they will try to put away accusing you because they are very organized. The bad people, they are very organized. And as a matter of fact, there are good people in the country. I have in the cabinet very good colleagues, two or three. All of them, we have accusations at the attorney general from these groups that everybody knows that they're accused just because they want to clear the road and they don't want people in the road that try to do the right things. But there is not a recipe, Victoria, and the only way is to do the good things and try to find out very good people and a very good team to try to do the good things.
Thank you, Carlos Raúl. If I may add, and I would say that if you have public policy making and politics in your veins and in your future, I would say go for it. And as Carlos Raúl said, if if those that interact in corruption scandals and do not have principles are a lot, well, we need to be more, no? And we need to be the ones who are the positive change makers, because it's like the egg and the kitchen, no? The chicken, sorry, the egg and the chicken. So it's either, I mean, either the system changes or either you make the system change, but we need the good people to make the system change. So the more good people get into the system and try to make it, try to change it structurally in terms of principles and values, I think that's the way to go. And that's the way to go everywhere. Otherwise, you would leave, you know, the bad guys, the whole space, no, for themselves. So we need the good people. We need the people that want to be, as I said, positive change makers to get there, to speak out, to negotiate, to, you know, to present their ideas, to be faithful to laws and regulations. So I think there's a huge chance of being a positive change maker. It's not, as Carlos Raúl says, it's not going to happen from one day to the other. It's a process, but we need to start the process. We need to start the movement, no? So now we have Paulo, please.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you, Carlos Raúl, for a wonderful presentation. I'm Paulo Barbieri, I'm from Argentina. I'm an MPP student. And I have two questions, if I may. Do you want the hard one first or the easy one first? So the first one would be about FDI, in the sense that in your role as Foreign Affairs Ministry, how do you attract FDI or foreign direct investment to a country like Guatemala, and which services and sectors would you choose to specialize in? And if you want to tell us about some policy you try to implement and it failed, because we often hear about the things that could go well, but we don't often learn from mistakes. So it would be very, very interesting to hear your thoughts on an FDI attraction. And my second question is about migration, in the sense that Central America has a very specific phenomena about unaccompanied child migration that is not similar, for example, to Venezuela. It's a different type of migration. And this is a huge challenge for the person in charge of the consular affairs, that it was you. So how do you design a special policy for unaccompanied child migrating to the north? And how do you make it work? Because you need to implement it outside your borders, consulates might not be enough, and so on and so forth. So if you wanna give us a few thoughts about what worked and what didn't, and well, mistakes you learn from and could be useful for us, that would be amazing. Thank you.
Okay, in the case of Guatemala, Paulo, talking about the foreign direct investments, our problem is two words, legal certainly. Nobody will come to the country if we don't offer to the investments to the, well, a legal certainly. This is fundamental. We have a, I don't know if you've been in Guatemala before, but we have a, it's a very, it's a nice country. We have a lot of resources, as I mentioned at the beginning of my presentation. We have two oceans. We have all the conditions to be a very developed country. Which is the problem? The problem is that we face an internal war for 36 years, as many countries in Latin America. And we signed the peace in 1996, almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago. But until today, we didn't find a way, we didn't agree between the Guatemalans, the way to attract more investments to the country. The foreign direct investments, the FDI, is around $1 billion, un millardo. Definitely last year, what different is this? Because in my presentation, I didn't mention last year because it's not the information is dismissed. Today, our main problem is that we are part of this convention, the 169 ILO convention. But we didn't approve. We signed, we are part of this convention since June 1996. But we didn't agree the law to regulate the consultations to the indigenous people. The problem, Paulo, in Guatemala is that in the case of Norway, for example, in Norway, you know where are the indigenous people located. It's very easy. You can give them a territory and you fix it very, very easy. But in the case of Guatemala, easy. The 65% of the population are indigenous. There is not a determinate indigenous territory. The whole country is indigenous. Well, I am indigenous. Everybody is indigenous. Nobody in Guatemala can say, no, I am not indigenous, because well, we have indigenous blood. Then there are two positions, and this is part of the problem of my country, the radicalization, that we have a sector. The private sector in my country is very strong. It's very strong. You don't have an idea how strong is it. And it is good, definitely, but it's bad at the same time. But when you have a very, very, very strong private sector, you have a very weak state. Why? Because in the interest of the private sector, they do whatever they have to do to guarantee their interests. And sometimes they procure that the state will be very weak. And this is part of our problem. We have a public servant, a very weak public servant, weak services. The juridical system is very weak too. Then how come we can offer to the investor a legal certainty in the country? We need to approve, and we cannot still postpone this, the approbation of the law. We need to approve this consultation to the indigenous people. But we have a discussion in the country, a very big discussion, because the private sector said, no, has to be this consultation. This consultation, they don't want to be like a referendum. And the indigenous people say, no, has to be a referendum. This is why, Paulo, we need to give more education to our people. We need to educate our people. We need to go out of poverty. And the only way to go out of poverty is give education, is attracting investments to the country. The other thing is the public infrastructure. We need to improve our public infrastructure. I recognize that right now, the Guatemalan public infrastructure is not the best. As a matter of fact, it's very bad. And we need to, I'm not talking only about roads, I am talking about airports, I am talking about ports, I am talking about electricity, as Vanessa mentioned. We need a lot of things to do, but I think the first step is to provide legal certainty to the investment, to the investors. And the first step to do that is to approve this law that regulates the consultation to the indigenous people. Because if not, if we don't have this law, the court could stop any kind of investment in the country. This will be my answer. And the second answer, the second question is about migration. The migration has, you need to divide this issue into parts. The first one is why the people are going to the United States, because this is the main destiny, no? Why the people are migrant to the United States? And the question is very easy, because they don't find a job in Guatemala, because they don't have the economical opportunities in Guatemala, or because they want to reunify with their families in the United States. Something happened, and is that, for example, the father of the family said, well, I will go to the United States first. They go to the United States. He start to work. In a year, he said, no, okay, now come my wife. And the wife go illegally too. And then they ask to the childs to migrate to the United States too. This is because you have a lot of unaccompanied childs going to the United States. But there is another reason too, and this is very important to mention. We have in this area Los Coyotes, the people that you pay to these people and they take you illegally to the United States. And the government of Barack Obama in 2008, he approved, well, the Congress, the Capitol, approved a law where they decide that if a child, a minor, arrives to the south border of the United States, and this person can provide three requirements, he can stay there. The first requirement is to have a relative in the United States. No matter if it is illegal or legal, okay? The second one is the compromise of this relative to give education to this minor. And the third one is that this relative doesn't have a criminal records in the United States. Then what happened? The coyotes, which are the best, they are very informed about the decision in the United States. They start to promote the migration of minors to the United States because they say, no, look, it's very easy. You have a relative, yes. Your relative has problem with the law, no. Well, and the education in the United States, the public education is free, okay, let's do it. And they used to charge between 2008 and 2012, between $8,000 and $10,000 for each child. And if you remember in the crisis of 2014, according to the Homeland Security, they found something like 73,000 non-accompanied childs arriving to the south border of the United States. Multiply for $8,000, for $10,000, and you will see the business it is. Then, Paulo, what government can do? The first one, provide opportunities in the country. Provide economical opportunities in the country of origin, in this case, Guatemala. This is not easy, because in our case, we need to increase the foreign direct investment. We need to multiply by 20 to try to intend generate enough jobs for the people that every year are reaching the 18 years old. In our case, is the people that are mayores de edad. This is the first action, what to do in our countries. And this is why we create El Plan de la Alianza para la Prosperidad. We create now the Plan Biden. But the question is, why those plans, there is a lot of money, doesn't impact our territories? And we need to be honest in our answer. There is a lot of international bureaucracy in the process to implement these plans that doesn't allow that, I don't know why, these plans impact the territories, impact the highlands, impact the people, the areas where the people are taking the decision to migrate to the United States. It's not only the problem of my country, it's the problem of the international cooperation too. And I'm sorry to say that, but I always say that the international cooperation for development has a serious problem, not only in Guatemala, in the whole world. 70%, 60% of that money is spent in bureaucracy, in administrative areas. There is a problem there. I know it's not their responsibility, because the main responsibility is from our governments, which are corrupt. I mentioned this already. But we need to generate opportunities in our country. This is fundamental, Paulo. If we don't generate opportunities in our countries, forget it. People are still going to the United States. And now, according to the new Biden migration policy, let me tell you something, is an invitation to still moving to the United States. I think at the end of the year, we will have more people going to the United States. In the last year, fiscal year, I'm talking about the United States fiscal year, 43,000 Guatemalans intend to migrate from Guatemala to the United States. Only in 3 months of this current fiscal year, we have 32,000 Guatemala. We almost reached the same amount because the expectation of the government of Biden. It's not easy. Try to understand this migration policy, and this migration issue is not easy. The other thing is what government has to do to protect the people are living in the United States or are trying to reach the United States. The only way is open offices, is open consulates, establish a relation with the local authorities. In our case, I remember I opened a consulate in Monterrey, the other one is San Luis Potosí. Well, we opened something like 10 consulates in Mexico in all the road that we identified that the migrants followed from Guatemala to the United States. And the only act to have a local authority is incredible. The Guatemalan authority, the local authorities respect more. The only act that the consul go to the office, to the police office and say, well, I am from Guatemala, please, I would like to have a relation with you. I am here to protect my people. Do you know this action is very interesting because they say, okay, we're going to respect the Guatemalans. It's incredible. It's incredible how come the only presence of our authorities that the human rights of these migrants are violated. Well, it's not an easy issue. It's a very complicated issue, Paulo, but again, the only way to stop the migration is to generate opportunities in our countries. There is not an only way. And this is a deferred responsibility is from our governments. And definitely we welcome the international cooperation plans, but these international cooperation plans has a lot of problems too that need to be reviewed. Thank you.
Thank you, Carlos Raúl, and thank you, Paulo. We're almost running out of time, so I guess the last question would come from Manuela. So go ahead, please, Manuela.
Hello, I'm Carlos Raúl. Thank you very much for your presentation today. My question was related to, well, migrants, but specifically to remittances. And I know this is a flow of money that goes directly to households and it's very spread, but considering that, as you mentioned by now, is the largest inflow of money from abroad in your country. So I was just, and well, this is a tendency we're seeing in many developing countries. So I was just wondering if when you were a foreign minister, was there any policy or education program or a plan to work with migrants and the household to better use this money as a poverty alleviation or at least to ensure secure channels for them to get them? Or, yep, thank you.
That is a very good question. Manuela. Manuela, we implement some programs with the cooperation of some institutions. One of them is the Inter-American Dialogue, based in Washington, D.C. And the idea is to instruct the people, the recipients in Guatemala, the people that receive the remittances, to instruct. We need to be careful which word we will use, to instruct how to use the money, because we cannot order them to use the money in that way, on that way. We establish a program and this program includes the use of electronic money too, because we are using in Guatemala electronic money, the electronic wallet now. The program was very successful. And as a matter of fact, according to the information of this OIM, Vanessa, how do you say in English OIM?
Office of Migration.
United Nations Office of Migration, you understand. OIM en español.
Sorry, the International Office of Migration of the UN.
International, yeah, exactly. Well, according to information of this office, in Guatemala, since 2014, more or less, the migrants, well, not the migrants, the families, the relatives of the migrants that receive the money from the United States, they are using the money in investments. 51% of the money of the whole remittances are using investments. As a matter of fact, you can see the communities that receive money from the United States. There is a big difference with the rest of the communities. We need to still working on that because the challenge is that these people use the money in educate their child. This is the challenge, to use the money in education. And of course in saves and in investments. I think we are improving that area, but we need to continue working with that. The Inter-American Dialogue is a very, very good partner of us in this of Guatemala in this area. The government by itself don't do nothing about it. We need to do it with the cooperation of these kind of institutions. But it's a big challenge, Manuela, to convince the people to use the money, to save the money, to use the money in education, to use the money in investments. I mentioned in my presentation that there is a phenomenon in Guatemala. The Guatemalan migrants, when they say, no, I already saved enough money, I already did what I want to do, they come back to Guatemala. And nobody knows that. It is very interesting. I organized a seminar for USAID 4 years ago, 3 years ago, more or less, because they want to understand this phenomenon. And well, I invite many friends that people that investigate this issue, and they prove me. They prove to the USAID, to the US Embassy in Guatemala, that they don't have idea how many Guatemalans they took everything and say, no, this is time. I already spent 20 years in the United States. I have enough money. I buy my land. I buy my house. I have my little store. I have my farm, whatever. I have my investment in Guatemala. It's time to go back because I want to live in Guatemala. I don't want to live in the United States anymore. And we don't have an idea how the amount of Guatemalans are going back to the country to reestablish in the country. Then I think our problem, Manuela, is that we have a very weak public servant because we should have this information, and this information is in hand of private institutions. In this case, this information particularly was provided by one of the universities in Guatemala that studied this kind of phenomenons.
Thank you so much, Carlos Raúl. And on that tenor, I would comment that in the context, I just found that very interesting information that in the context of the financial, the fiscal support from countries in Latin America, there's two outliers within the COVID crisis. There's two outliers. One is Brazil and the other is Mexico. Brazil, close to 9% of GDP, Mexico, 0.7% of GDP. It's only the second to Barbados in the whole Latin America, being the 15th largest economy in the world. But then we started seeing the remittances increasing in the last months. And the reason why behind this was the fiscal support in the US. So we indirectly were beneficiaries of the fiscal support in the US because Mexicans in the US, either documented or undocumented, were receiving lump sums for their support throughout COVID. So they knew that their families were having a hard time in Mexico, so their remittances increased as a result of the fiscal support in the US. These small villages and small communities with poor people are having increased resources, not as a result of Mexico support, but as a result of fiscal support in the US and remittances being sent to Mexico. So remittances, I think, should be further explored. And many of the people that receive remittances basically use remittances to survive. It's not that they would have space for saving, it's not that they would have space for something else. But anyhow, in Mexico, we created a program which was called 341, in which we gathered communities that receive remittances, and then they put a certain amount of money collectively, those receivers of remittances. The other money was put from the local government, and then another money was put from the national government. And with that fund, we could create a programs in their local communities, sports, health, education programs. So that are the kind of standards that can be used worldwide to maximize the use of remittances, in the communities and for the benefit of people. But for most of them, it's basically survival money for them to move forward. But anyhow, I think we've reached the time. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. Thank you for your time. Thank you, Carlos Raúl, for being so generous with your time, so generous with your comments, so open and transparent with your experience. And yes, let's give you some clappings here, and hope to see you next time in the next PIP series we have. Thanks for joining. Have a great afternoon. Gracias, amigo.
Gracias a ti. Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you. Gracias.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.